From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. A nonprofit called the Holistic Life Foundation has been bringing mindfulness, yoga, and meditation into Baltimore public schools for nearly 15 years. Suspensions and detentions appear to have dropped as a result, and according to our guests, some kids have really taken the practice to heart.
One day, a little girl was picking on Janasia, and Janasia grabbed the girl by the arms and threw her up against the locker room and goes, "Ooh, you lucky I meditate."
We hear from the co-founder of the Holistic Life Foundation, a student who has since become a teacher in the program, and a researcher who studies school-based mindfulness programs. Mindfulness, yoga, meditation, and what they can do for inner-city kids. On the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. We're talking today about mindfulness, yoga, meditation, and what they can do for inner city kids. A Baltimore-based organization called the Holistic Life Foundation has been teaching these centering skills in public schools for nearly 15 years. Media outlets from Oprah Magazine to The Guardian newspaper have covered their efforts, and they're now working in more than a dozen schools. Let's listen to a clip of a Patterson Park High School 10th grader talking about the meditation program at her school called Mindful Moment.
I think it has affected me in a good way because it's like you could calm and you could breathe and it's like real relaxing. It's calming for you, like if you like real hyped up, if you're just having a bad day, you could come and just relax. And it makes you feel good about yourself and it makes you feel good as far as your inner as well as your outer.
With me in the studio today is the co-founder of the Holistic Life Foundation, Andres Gonzalez. Welcome to On the Record.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for coming. And a former Holistic Life Foundation student who is now a teacher in the program is also with us, Larry Jackson. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for the invite.
Andres Gonzalez, what is the Holistic Life Foundation trying to achieve in schools?
One of our goals is to provide youth with techniques that allow them to self-regulate, to manage their emotions, their feelings, what's going on within their bodies and in their heads, so that when they're faced with scenarios of heightened emotions such as anger or stress or frustration, anxiety, they're able to use some of these tools and techniques that we provide them to be able to regulate, center themselves, be in the present moment, and be less impulsive and reactionary and more respond to scenarios that they're facing. A lot of the techniques will also help them focus, concentrate more, and achieve higher, I would say, academically.
Do you focus on underserved schools?
Majority of our focus right now is in Baltimore in the underserved communities.
Describe how you transmit these skills.
So it's a wide variety of different programs, but basically what it is we'll come in and we'll provide a session. Most of our sessions are structured the same way, so there'll be a centering technique. So it'll be like a breathing exercise, usually some belly breathing, to get them to kind of slow down, not worry about what's happened to them or what's going to happen throughout the day, but just to be ready for the entire session. And then following the centering technique and the movement will be yoga poses, some type of bending or stretching, stuff to kind of get their circulation going. Or with the younger youth, we find it help them kind of burn off all the energy that they have. And then it'll finish off with a meditation.
How do you get young kids to sit still and breathe?
When you're dealing with the really, really young youth and to get them engaged, you want to use a few different type of techniques. So you want to focus more on maybe some animal poses so they have fun. Instead of getting them to do the breathing in and out of their nose, when they're breathing, you make them make the animal sounds. So if we're going to do a cat pose, for example, you make a meow. If you're doing a cow pose, you make a moo. And then balanced poses like a tree where they have to sit on one foot and they're having fun, you know. And then there's a great concept. It's a belly buddy. So we really focus on the breathing and manipulating of the diaphragm. When you breathe in, your belly's supposed to expand. When you exhale, your belly's supposed to fall. So what you can do is you can lay the youth down on the ground on their backs and get them a stuffed animal, or even if you take a rock, whatever it is, you place it on their belly, and you remind everyone, breathe in deep through your nose, and your belly buddy's supposed to rise. Breathe out, and your belly buddy's supposed to fall.
Larry Jackson, tell us about your first encounter with yoga and meditation.
My first encounter with yoga and meditation was with the Holistic Life Foundation. I was in the fifth grade, so 10 years old. The first thing I remember is the counselor. She was going around to different classrooms, collecting different students to participate in yoga. And I wanted something to get into, and I saw that she was grabbing a bunch of my friends, so I'm like, I'm down for it. So I didn't know much about yoga at all. I didn't know if they said yoga or yogurt.
Did it take a while for you to feel connected to it?
It was a long learning process. You know, even to this day, I try to get deeper and deeper into the practice. So back then, I understood the physical part of yoga rather than the mental part. I'm pretty sure back then at the time, it did help to center myself. But once I got to middle and high school, I started to focus more on the breathing and more of calming myself down and centering myself. And I started to pick up my own practice.
But in elementary school, what do you think it did for you back then before you were as thoughtful?
It helped me to keep my cool because it was a lot going on. Like in school, it was a lot of chaos. That's common in a lot of schools throughout the city. So along with that and things that was going on at home, like my mother passed away when I was 8, and I think like a month later, so my grandfather passed away, and he's the one that held the house down. During that time, it was just like a lot of drugs in and out the house. So my home was always chaotic. But then when I got to the after-school program, it was like a more relaxed, you know, place to be.
Andres Gonzalez, how did you get into yoga yourself?
So my practice didn't start until right around when I finished college. That was around 2001. Meeting Ali and Ottman Smith, the other co-founders in college, we always like to joke and say that we met at like a meditation class, but we didn't. We were a little wild in college, so we met at the bar.
And this was in College Park.
Yeah, University of Maryland at College Park. And our party group kind of turned into a book club. Three guys who would just be talking with each other and philosophizing about life and why are we here and what's the meaning of life and what's the purpose of life. And we started just reading all sorts of texts on ancient history, creation theories, astronomy, astrology, just really doing a lot of soul searching. And Ali and Ottman had a practice when they were younger. Their parents had introduced them to a lot of yogic principles and meditation. So they meditated a lot when they were younger. So I think it kind of all, as we were doing our research, steered and veered back to those practices. We were hermits, kind of. That's all we did. I remember that was from 2001 to 2003, probably some of the best times of my life where I was just meditate, breathe, discuss how I'm feeling, be a scientist. And that's what our teacher always said to us, you know, don't believe me, don't believe what you read in the scripture, just do the techniques, do the exercises, and be a scientist and see what it does for you.
This is On the Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Andres Gonzalez, co-founder of a nonprofit that brings yoga and meditation into the schools, the Holistic Life Foundation, and Larry Jackson, a teacher and former student in the program. Andres Gonzalez, I hear you describe that, and it seems like a big gulf between that kind of intense, thoughtful effort that you and your two colleagues were putting into it and elementary school.
When the transformation was occurring within us, it got to a point where everyone kept asking us, why are you so happy? And we knew that these techniques were bringing that bliss out of us. So when we got an opportunity with the first group where Larry was in at Windsor Hills Elementary, they said they had 20 quote-unquote problem kids, and they wanted us to teach them football. And we thought, well, instead of teaching these young men football, how about we teach them some of these techniques that we were using? And we just made sure that they were practical techniques that they could start using in the classroom and in their lives. So a lot of the breathing techniques and the meditation techniques, you don't need a large space in your home. You don't need a yoga mat to do them. You have your breath with you, and that's your anchor. So teaching them to use these techniques through everyday times and scenarios, I think, is the best way to start incorporating it into their lives. And like Larry said, we start with the movement because it burns off their energy. You know, when he may not remember as much as when I do, but the first time they came in that room, they picked up wrestling mats and just smacking each other on the head like WrestleMania. You know, they had all this energy. And so often I find, as we've been doing this for 15 years, that teachers are like, oh, he has too much energy, he needs to get medicated. And we believe it's about cultivating that energy and being able to harness it and use it. We just really thought the best way to do this is give them the same techniques we're using. And as the organization grew and the program grew, so did our ability to decide, all right, these techniques work for this age group, these techniques work for this age group.
Larry Jackson, are there kids, especially teenagers, who resist it?
Yes, a lot of kids resist it, but also, surprisingly, there are a lot of kids that don't resist it. And the way that we try to win them over is very similar to the way that these guys won us over. They were pretty cool people, and they led by example. They was always in a good mood. They always wanted to help somebody. They always helped us. I think that's the best way to win over the students and to, like, connect yoga to things that is relevant today, because yoga wasn't very popular 15 years ago. But now you see it in video games, on magazine covers.
Tell me about a particular student who lives in your memory, somebody for whom this whole approach had a big impact.
I'm going to go back to Janaja. She came a super long ways. I think she's in high school now, but she started off at Robert W. Coleman Elementary, and she was part of this group of girls who I didn't really get along with too well. They didn't want to hear anything I ever had to say, but over time, as years went by, she just respected me more. She participated more in the yoga, and it seemed like she got more in tune with herself. She cared about herself more.
Andres Gonzalez, what results have you seen overall? Are there measurable results you can describe of, well, first of all, how many schools are you in now?
So right now, currently, Holistic Life Foundation is in 14 schools in Baltimore. By the end of the month, we should probably be in around 20. A wide variety of programs. And, you know, I've seen youth like Janaja, like Larry said, where the young lady, I've seen her fight more ladies because of them picking and bullying on her when she was younger, until one day her teacher tells me that one day a little girl was picking on Janaja, and Janaja grabbed the girl by the arms and threw her up against the locker room and goes, "Ooh, you lucky I meditate." And she lets go of the young lady and sits down and starts breathing with her eyes closed. And the teacher's like, "It was the most amazing thing in the world." So being able to see them deal with conflicts peacefully, whether they're able to focus and control their emotions better, whether they're able to just be in that present moment more and not worry about what's going on in their neighborhoods and in their environments, because they're living in these areas where a lot of them are witnessing traumas that are occurring all the time. And it's very difficult for you to come into an academic setting and to be able to excel or to achieve in that setting if in the morning you didn't get any food or you didn't get enough sleep or someone just got incarcerated or even murdered in your life.
And does this show up in school statistics in some measurable way?
One of the most recent numbers I think that really wows people is at Robert W. Coleman, where we host our after-school program and that Mindful Moment program. And this is in the epicenter of where the Freddie Gray uprising occurred, that school had zero suspensions. The youth have gained skills to allow them to regulate themselves. So when they're faced with scenarios where they would get suspended, now they're able to take a moment and to breathe and to stop and then respond to a scenario that allow them to be able to manage their day more so they're not getting in trouble. At Patterson High School, after we did the Mindful Moment program there, you know, the principal would say he doesn't know if this was because of our program, but we were there, and after the first year there, things like attendance increased. The largest number of freshmen graduated to become sophomores. Detentions decreased, suspensions decreased, fights decreased. So the entire climate and culture of the school really becomes transformed. I feel like everyone's more wary of themselves, and since they're gaining that love and compassion for themselves and they have it for everyone else, it just calms the whole school down, and it makes the climate be more peaceful and present.
What would it take to scale up what you're doing, to be in more cities, to be in more schools?
I think the main thing it would take for us to scale up is funding, of course, to be able to pay for the staff to run and implement the programs. But we're working on something now where we're trying to get it so that, say, Chicago wants us to come in system-wide, implement all our programs in their entire city district. We're working on a package where we'll provide a curriculum, we'll do trainings for the staff, we'll have audio and video files they can access so that there's not a bigger burden on the teachers, but instead I can train you so you have the general idea of these techniques. When you want to do some belly breathing, you can get the kids to all put headphones in or play this tape. It'll be one of us, one of the co-founders, leading through the exercises, and they can just start running the programs themselves.
Looking at it from the perspective of a principal or a school system, What is at risk? What is the decision they have to make? What's the choice for them?
The biggest pushback we've gotten when implementing programs is that the school, the administration, or the instructors are worried that it's taking away from academic time. That if you have a 15-minute recording at the beginning of the day and the end of the day, it's 30 minutes that you've now taken away from academic time. Understandably so. But the idea is that if you give us those 15 minutes in the morning and those 15 minutes at the end of the day, now you're not managing your class. So say it's 45 minutes you have of teacher time. If I can get the kids centered and to learn these skills, then you're not wasting 5 minutes a class telling people, all right, class, settle down. Johnny, get yourself together. Hey, no fighting. Come on, everyone focus, which they're doing all the time. So instead of it being Johnny with his head all over the place and you teach him for 45 straight minutes, teach him for 40, but he's actually paying attention.
Andres Gonzalez, co-founder of the nonprofit Holistic Life Foundation, a Baltimore-based nonprofit that brings yoga and mindfulness meditation into schools. Larry Jackson, a former student with the program, is now an instructor with Holistic Life. Thanks to you both.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Quick break now. And when we come back, we'll talk about the science of meditation with a researcher at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health who's studying its impact on children in urban schools. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about mindfulness and yoga and what skills like these can do for kids in urban schools. Before the break, we heard from the co-founder of the Holistic Life Foundation, a Baltimore nonprofit that brings yoga and meditation into schools. We also heard from a student turned instructor. Now we turn to the science. Tamar Mendelson, an associate professor at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, studies school-based mindfulness practices. The Holistic Life Foundation's programs are among them. And she's with me in the studio. Tamar Mendelson, welcome to On the Record.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
I'm glad you could be with us. Let's start with the big picture. How much research has been done on the impact of meditation and mindfulness on people in general?
There's a growing base of literature with adults, but the literature on students in schools is still very limited. We're in the early stages.
Do you think it's different?
There are a lot of questions about mindfulness in schools. So we don't know a whole lot about what should mindfulness practices look like with kids of different ages. What's the right dose, the right intensity? How much should kids be getting in school? What are the best ways to deliver this in a way that affects the whole school environment?
Can you give us a working definition of mindfulness?
So often Jon Kabat-Zinn's definition is used, which is paying attention in a particular way, on purpose, non-judgmentally, in the present moment. So basically, mindfulness is about attention. But I would also say it's about compassion and kindness.
How common are school-based programs like the Holistic Life Foundations?
So there's a kind of an explosion of interest in mindfulness and yoga in schools right now. There isn't as much research on these programs. So I think we need to be careful that our enthusiasm doesn't outstrip our evidence.
How do you do research on a program?
It's challenging to research mindfulness programming in schools. In research, we like to make sure everything is very neat and rigorous. Schools are messy, real-world environments, so there are a lot of moving parts to handle.
Tell us about the research you have conducted on the Holistic Life Foundation's work.
So I've been working with Holistic Life since 2007, and we've done work together on their program in school for yoga and mindfulness with fourth and fifth grade students, and also a separate study with fifth and sixth grade students. We found that students reported increases in their ability to self-regulate in response to stress in our first study. In our second study, we did not replicate that finding, and partly because we had a lot of challenges in terms of being able to implement the programs the way they were intended in the schools. We really struggle as researchers with how do we best capture what's happening for students with these programs. And in that second study, when we spoke and talked with students about their experiences, they told us some pretty incredible narratives about how they were using the skills. So even sometimes when we can't capture data through surveys or teacher reports, students often tell us stories about the way they're using these practices that are very powerful. I should also say that the program that Holistic Life is doing now is a whole school approach, and we've done interviews with students and teachers about that approach and heard from them what the experience is of having teachers and students be part of a community that's practicing mindfulness.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Tamar Mendelson, an associate professor at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. She studies school-based mindfulness practices. You've mentioned interviewing. Is that the primary tool you have to assess as opposed to looking at suspensions and graduation rates and things like that?
We have different tools. We give surveys to students so they can report on things like their mood, their relationships with friends, their stress levels. We also ask teachers to fill out rating scales about how are students behaving in the classroom, what is their academic performance like. We can also access school records to look at suspensions, attendance, grades, test scores, and we can also use cognitive tests like tests of attention and memory.
If I remember correctly, you said that in your first study you could see an effect of the interventions that was less clear in your second study. Tell us more about that.
One key difference between the first and second studies was that in the first study, the yogis delivered a yoga and mindfulness class to students 4 days a week. In the second study, they delivered the program 2 days a week. So the students had essentially half the dose of mindfulness and yoga in the second study. This may be a really important signal to us that dose matters and that more may be better.
What are your insights about the most important variables? Dose is one. What other variables are really important in whether or not this kind of intervention is successful?
The instructor is very important, and the relationship students have with the instructor. One of the things that blew me away about Ali, Atman, and Andy when I met them is just what incredible people they are and the capacity they have to create relationships with students. There's a lot of debate among people who care about mindfulness programming in schools about who should teach these programs. Should it be outside instructors? Should teachers be trained to do this? So that's a big question for the field.
We met Andres Gonzalez, one of the co-founders, a few minutes ago. He and the other founders attended Baltimore City Schools. They are very tightly tied to the community. Is that a factor?
I think it is. I think in working with Baltimore City youth, it's really important to understand their culture, where they're coming from, and what are the stressors that they're dealing with. A lot of these kids are living in extreme poverty. They're exposed to chronic stress and adversity related to poverty, and that really affects their day-to-day lives.
You also write in one of your evaluations about the challenges for administrators, for principals, for teachers, and especially you write about turnover.
Right? So it's really stressful for teachers in these schools as well. They often don't get a lot of support. They're stretched really thin, and they're handling large classrooms with many kids who have emotional and behavioral needs that aren't getting addressed. So these teachers are often just stressed to the max. When we would come into schools to do research on mindfulness and yoga with students, the teachers would often say, "What about us? Don't we get any yoga?" So this work has convinced me that we can't ignore the teachers. We need to make sure that they are also receiving these practices, both for themselves and because it's really hard for students to generalize this and really use it throughout their lives if they're not in an environment that supports it.
But then it seems to me as if in deciding whether or not to put an intervention like this in a school or in a classroom, administrators need to be aware that it takes a lot of support. And maybe if they can't give it that support, maybe they shouldn't do it.
That's exactly right. The support is key. What we found is that in schools where we have real support from the principal, and the principal really makes it doable for teachers, in those schools we see better effects.
And scientifically, what is at work? What is going on in the brains of, say, the students when this intervention takes place?
Right. So we are starting to understand more about the neuroscience of mindfulness with adults and how it may increase capacities in the brain for attention and awareness without emotional attachment. We know less about what's happening in the brains of children. And we truthfully are still really on the path to understanding what are the mechanisms here? How does mindfulness create changes for people?
So we'll have to talk to you again. That will be a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Tamar Mendelsohn is an associate professor at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. She studies school-based mindfulness practices. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for listening today. Tune in tomorrow.